Why do people behave a certain way? What is the decision-making process? How to make strategies that nudge people to take desired action? At DNudge, we discuss questions like these and more. We examine strategies and talk about real examples that build a bridge between marketing and behavioral economics. For you, our listeners, this podcast is for you to see the magic in understanding human behavior and for you to learn and create strategies that make change happen. On today's podcast, we are going to discuss the future of behavioral science and NudgeTalk 2021. Although this year's NudgeTalk was only my second one, I had high expectations, especially if you consider the fact that I have been waiting for this since June of 2020. That said, the tone of this year was slightly different. While last year was largely about the opportunities this line of thinking can unlock, this year to me felt a little more down to earth, a bit more mature than rampant optimism. This year's NudgeTalk was about questioning if behavioral science is everything. And the answer is no, it's not. Behavioral science is not the answer to everything. Though it's necessary in some cases, it may not be the penultimate solution. More importantly, I think we learned not to try to go into a problem and think it needs to be solved just by using behavioral science alone. Instead, use behavioral science to expand the potential solution space to a problem by adding another dimension to the problem. To quote Rory Sutherland himself, "The best ideas nowadays don't emerge within disciplines, they emerge at the intersection between them." On that note, these are your hosts Ritika and Arjun, and we welcome you to the final episode of this season of BeNudged by Maya. Over 10 months, we had brought you along a journey and discovery of all things behavioral science. And what a journey it has been. We had listeners tuning in from over 38 countries. And we thank each and every one of you for listening. And we hope that you have learned something new. We felt it will be fitting for the last episode of this season to be about the event that kicked off our curiosity in this field to begin with. That is NudgeTalk and the future of behavioral science. So on that note, what were the highlights for you, Arjun?
Hey, I think that's a really hard one, if I'm being honest. But for me, Rory's opening speech made me think a lot. And I think it set the right precedent for, you know, us behavioral science enthusiasts and specialists to stop and think, is BS really everything? And just like you said, as it turns out, it's not. And although this might be a given, but I think Rory's points on the importance of creativity really stuck with me. I believe like oftentimes we find ourselves racing to a problem, and most of our times our solution is often pinned to something that we have tried before or something that we know that works. Don't get me wrong, these aren't necessarily bad things, but we just need to inject some creativity into the process every now and then. For example, Sam Tayton's session spoke about the concept of biomimicry. For those who don't know, it is a practice that learns from and mimics the strategies found in nature to solve human design challenges. Mm-hmm. At its very core, this field came about due to the intersection of one or more studies. Therefore, I think and I agree that we must break away from silos and expand our potential solution spaces by combining behavioral science with other fields of studies and discipline. And just like Rory, I believe like this is where the future of behavioral science as a field will be.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. The future of behavioral science or behavioral economics is definitely not in isolation, but with the combination of other fields of studies. We should expand the knowledge base and not limit ourselves at the intersection of psychology and economics, but rather explore the connections between behavioral science and other fields. For example, let's take cognitive economics. According to a research paper by Miles Kimball on cognitive economics, she defines it as the economics of what is in people's mind. In practical terms, this means that cognitive economics is characterized by its use of distinctive kind of data. This includes data on expectations, hypothetical choices, cognitive ability, and expressed attitude. She goes on to say that the name cognitive economics might initially sound as if it is yet another synonym to behavioral economics, which might have been better named as psychological economics, she says, and I agree. However, although there is an overlap between cognitive economics and behavioral economics, It is something different. She says that the most obvious difference is that cognitive economics is narrower. Behavioral economics addresses a huge range of issues and cuts across all the data that I just mentioned above, while cognitive economics focuses primarily on innovative kind of survey data along with laboratory data of the same type. Now, if you would like more information on it, you can check the link of this paper. It will be available in the description of this podcast.
The next place where the understanding of human behavior or behavioral economics can be of great help, I believe, is data science, primarily due to our over-reliance on all things data. Most organizations today go out of their way to purchase more data without actually even utilizing their own data reserves first. One could even say this is nothing more than companies falling for some kind of wagon effect, as they believe that their position in the market could somehow be compromised if they aren't already analyzing mountains of data like their competitors. So in fact, according to a report by Capgemini, today, half of the organizations say that their decision-making is completely data-driven, and there is a significant increase of those who said they have promoted to data-driven decision-making in 2018. So a couple of insights from this report stood out for me. One, decision-making approach in organizations, however majorly reactive, is looking at what happened in the past or why it happened. Further, fewer than half, I'm talking 43%, are able to monetize their data and insights through product and services. But only a minority, I'm talking 39% now, are able to turn data-driven insights into a sustained competitive advantage. The report further states only 20% of the business executives actually trust the data. It is easy to spot the error in their ways, but more importantly, I'd argue it's even more important to spot the inherent bias. Allow me to explain. Mm-hmm. According to Daniel Kahneman, in the mathematics of accuracy, there are two types of errors which are equivalent. There is the average of error, which is known as bias, and then there is the variability of error, which is called as noise. Which means that despite all the charts, graphs, and complicated models, even the most accurate analysis is not completely free of bias or noise. And this applies to purely quantitative methods of analysis as well. A possible method to alleviate this noise would be to study the intersection of behavioral science and data science. I say this because in data science, we can compute the numbers and the statistical significance and everything. But from the behavioral science, we understand what people are thinking.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Data is definitely important, but it is not everything. And there is no better example to highlight this than looking at modern prediction recommendation algorithms. Algorithms have become all too common in a daily decision-making process. They now help us find a way in a new city via GPS, determine our entertainment choices in streaming services like Spotify and Netflix, etc., and generally shape our online behavior through recommendation and personalized offers on platforms like Amazon. Although these algorithms are designed to facilitate choice by humans, it's surprising to discover how little research in human behavior actually goes into their design. As a result, these algorithms are more suited to assist a rational agent than a human being, and Netflix is a case in point. They have long proclaimed that their recommendation algorithm strives to help users find a program to enjoy with minimal effort. Yet, a 2016 study found that it takes an average Netflix user 18 minutes to choose a program to watch. And from a behavioral economics point of view, this phenomenon is called choice overload. There's so much to talk here, but probably another episode where we just focus on data science and behavioral economics. For now, moving on to the next field where behavioral economics has been widely used and is also something Arjun and I have been working on for years, is conversion rate optimization. Simply put, conversion rate optimization is a method to change a visitor to a customer or a lead by using insights gathered through qualitative, quantitative, and heuristical research. Tools like heat maps and scroll maps have greatly enhanced the capability to understand user behavior online. Further, the research is bolstered with carefully crafted surveys. We have seen an increase of 120% and more by merely changing the landing page and A/B testing it with slight variations. Conversion optimization looks at a holistic picture. It uses data to understand the what, and then uses behavioral research to understand the why behind a person's action. If I have to give you a simple example of optimization, it will be form optimization used by H&M. H&M gives people reasons to fill a form as opposed to just giving people a long form to fill. Now, H&M uses it really well. On its form, it asks the birthday, and then it tells people that why are they asking that information. They tell that giving your birthday to them will allow them to customize offers based on the date. And they do a similar thing for shipping address as well. They mention that it is for delivery purposes, and during sign up, if a person does not want to input that information, it can be skipped for later. Now, these things may seem very trivial, but they aren't, because humans work on simple fundamentals and not just on logic. The simple fundamentals they work on are like trust, commitment, community, to just name a few. Understanding these idiosyncrasies gives a way to create human-centric solutions, and not just solutions that are technologically efficient, but leave the human behind.
But there is a problem. With so much competition and an increase in awareness of behavioral science, human behaviors is now being exploited, be it social dilemma or fake urgency driven by ads which say offers run out soon.
Oh, yes.
There needs to be some strict boundaries on how we use these data, right? We reckon at this rate of data consumption, we will soon reach an ethical junction wherein we will have to create strong ethical guardrails to keep us from straying too far into the dark. No one wants another Cambridge Analytica scenario to happen again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, to protect behavioral science against the corrupting influence of the rich and powerful and those whose vested interest only lies in profitability and increasing market share, we will need to create a separate set of laws and guidelines on how to use behavioral data.
I think I agree there.
Yeah. More importantly, we need to stop looking at biases as the problem, but rather as a solution itself. See, as humans, we can never truly be unbiased. Therefore, as behavioral scientists or experimentalists or practitioners, we must first work through the bias and understand the real why and design environments that foster trust. And to do that, I think we should expand our solution spaces from nudges and interventions. I say this because at present, we rely on nudges to correct some kind of behavioral irregularity that we have found. We might also look into why this irregularity is happening or what could have caused it. But that's really how nudges are designed currently, right?
Mm-hmm.
But moving forwards, I think if we could combine the power of predictive analytics with behavioral science, then maybe we can predict when or where this behavioral irregularities may or may not occur, and also understand the effect it may have on the market using forecasting and projection. This is where the intersection of data science and behavioral science could prove really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, in other fields like we just mentioned, be it economics, conversion rate optimization, UX, marketing data, etc., when these individual fields combine with behavioral science, that is where the effective solutions can be built. So instead of looking at all these fields individually, let's look at the intersection of these fields instead. So I'd like to conclude on something Dilip Soman said. He believed that as researchers and practitioners, we should recognize and understand the centrality, which is the essence of human behavior first. Because if a product or services is behaviorally well designed, then we won't need a nudge to adopt them. In conclusion, if nudge units are becoming scarce and they are needed less and less by the end of the next decade, then we as behavioral enthusiasts would have done things correctly.
That's very well put, and I completely understand and agree that there's a need to create products and services which are behaviorally well designed, which is something that even though we are progressing in terms of technology and the information we have, we are still not able to do. And the fact that there has to be a confluence of two fields is really wonderful. Fields individually, definitely they do have a lot of power and they can do a lot of things by themselves. But combining behavioral economics with fields such as data, such as psychology, and so on, can really enhance the solution set and make people think beyond the conventional forms of solution. So, on that note, I think we can conclude this episode of this season of Be Nudge. We hope you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed making these episodes. While this may be the end of the season of Be Nudge, we will be back with more insights from the world of behavioral science, analytics, research, and so much more. If you like the podcast and think someone else will benefit from it, please share it with them and please leave a rating or a review for this podcast so it reaches others as well.
We are truly grateful for everyone who has in any way, be it a listener or a guest, been a part of Be Nudge. Thank you so much for being part of our journey thus far. And until next time, this is your host, Arjun.
And this is Ritika, signing off. And just for that food for thought, leaving you all with a quote by Rory Sutherland. Never do the compromise version of anything. Do something different. See you next time.
See ya.